Mahabharata Chapter 7 The Pandavas Sent Away. During the weeks that followed, Duryodhan and his brothers slowly began to win over the people. They distributed wealth and honors liberally, and provided the citizens with all kinds of amenities and pleasures. At the same time, Dhritarashtra's ministers spoke continuously in the court about Varanavata, as they had been instructed by the king. The Pandavas heard them describe the city's attractions. The festival of Pashupata is starting soon. The procession has no equal anywhere in the world. The decorations, gems, jewels, and entertainments delight the heart. The young princes were attracted. When Dhritarashtra saw that their curiosity had been aroused, he said, "I've been hearing a lot about Varanavata of late. It occurred to me that you boys would derive much pleasure from visiting that city. Why not make a state visit? Bestow charity on the people and take your leisure. After enjoying yourselves there, you may return here whenever you please." Yudhisthira, however, was intelligent. He understood that this was simply a ploy to remove them from the city. Why did the king not ask his own sons to go to Varanavata? Yudhisthira had seen the unusual kindness that Duryodhan had been displaying toward the people lately, and he knew that he was hatching a plot. But he felt helpless. He decided it would be better to do as the king suggested for the time being. Their position was not strong. The Pandavas had few friends or supporters, and the king's sons were constantly inclined to harm them in any way they could. Perhaps a time away from Hastinapur would help. A date was set for the Pandavas' departure. Duryodhan was overjoyed that the Pandavas had agreed to go, and immediately began to make plans. He summoned his confidential counselor, Purochana. Taking him by the hand, the prince said, "This world and all its wealth is as much yours as it is mine. You should act so it will be protected. You are my most trustworthy supporter. I am completely dependent upon you. Listen as I tell you what must be done, and done secretly. Do not repeat to anyone what I shall now say to you." Duryodhan asked Purochana to go at once to Varanavata. Using skilled and trusted artisans, he should construct a spacious mansion for the Pandavas. It should be elegant and full of rich furnishings, but it should be made entirely of flammable materials. Mix ghee and oil with earth and a large quantity of lac. Plaster the walls with it, and then paint over it carefully. Then scent the house so that no one will suspect anything. The prince also instructed Purochana to leave pots of ghee and oil in the house. He wanted to ensure that the building would burn to ashes within minutes. Duryodhan then revealed to Purochana the whole plan he had made with Shakuni. Purochana should meet with the Pandavas as soon as they arrive in Varanavata. He would then show them to their quarters. He should be sure they knew the house had been built for them on the king's orders. Purochana should live with them to help allay their suspicions. Then, when they were least suspecting it, Purochana should set fire to the house while they were sleeping. Duryodhan squeezed his minister's hand. "Everything depends upon you, Purochana. Know that I shall reward you with unlimited wealth if you do me this favor. Leave immediately, for the Pandavas will be there soon." Purochana promised to do everything he had been asked. Gathering a number of his men, he left immediately for Varanavata on a swift chariot drawn by asses. They began work on the house the moment they arrived. On the day of their departure, the Pandavas went before their elders and bowed in respect. They touched Bhishma and Dhritarashtra's feet and embraced their equals with love. Taking leave of the ladies, they walked respectfully around them with folded palms. They then mounted their fine golden chariots. But Yudhisthira checked them. "The king is our father, our preceptor, and our superior. He is always worthy of our worship, and should be obeyed without question. This is the eternal injunction of the scripture, and we should abide by it with a peaceful mind. When the time came, he said, they could render his brothers and him service in another way. The citizens then circumambulated the chariots and departed, tears flooding their eyes. When the Pandavas reached the edge of the city, Vidura met them. Vidura had learned of Duryodhan's scheme through his palace spies. He wanted to warn Yudhisthira without anyone else understanding his message. Going before the prince, who was still in the people's midst, he spoke to him in the language of the Malecha tribespeople. Speaking cryptically, Vidura said, one who knows there are sharp weapons capable of cutting the body, although not made of metal, is not injured by them. He survives who understands that the consumer of wood and straw does not reach the dwellers of a hole in the forest. Always stay alert. One who keeps his senses under control can never be overcome by any enemy. Vidura spoke for some minutes, and Yudhisthira, who was versed in many languages, understood his meaning, although the message was not understandable by others. When Vidura finished, Yudhisthira replied, I understand. Vidura smiled, and then walked respectfully around the princes. Bidding them farewell, he left for his own house. On the road to Varanavata, Kunti asked Yudhisthira what Vidura had said. Yudhisthira replied that Vidura had told him that their house in Varanavata would be burned down. He had also told the prince that the means of escape would be revealed to him. The learned Vidura then said that he who is self-controlled wins the sovereignty of the earth. When the citizens of Varanavata heard that the famous Pandava brothers were approaching their city, they came out in the thousands to greet the princes. The people saw Yudhisthira leading his brothers, like Indra leading the celestials. They worshipped and welcomed the princes and led them into their city to the accompaniment of trumpets, drums, and conch shells. Cheers filled the air as the brothers proceeded slowly along the road. Reaching the city's main concourse, they got down from their chariots and went first to meet the Brahmins. Then they met with the city officials, then the warriors, the tradespeople, and finally the workers and servant classes. After the greetings were over, the Pandavas were received as guests of one of the city's chief officials. Remembering Vidura's warning and unsure of what to expect, they remained there for 10 days. Then Purochana told them that their own residence was ready. He personally led the princes and Kunti to the house he had named the Blessed Dwelling. As they entered the house, Yudhisthira said quietly to Bhima, from the odors I detect here, it is evident that this house has been made of lac and other materials soaked in ghee and oil. Without doubt, Purochana intends to burn us to death in this place. It is just as Vidura told me. Duryodhan has obviously entrusted Purochana with the job of killing us. Bhima replied, then why should we live in this death trap? Let us return to where we have already been staying. Yudhisthira did not think Bhima's idea to be a wise one. If we let Purochana realize we suspect him, then he may try anything in order to kill us. Obviously, he is without scruples and is determined to do the will of the ruthless Duryodhan. We should not give him any indication that we are aware of his wicked intentions. When Purochan left, the brothers spoke openly together. Yudhisthira said they should dig a tunnel under the house in order to escape when the time came. That was what Vidura had instructed. Bhima and Arjuna wondered why they should live in fear of Duryodhan. Why not challenge him outright? Bhima was especially angry. Remembering the times when Duryodhan had tried to poison him, he slapped his biceps and said menacingly, just order me, dear brother. I shall immediately crush the Kauravas with my bare hands. No, Yudhisthira said. Their position was in no way equal to that of their cousins. They are 100, and we are 5. They have rank, power, friends, allies, and wealth. Dhritarashtra will never abandon his sons, and Bhishma and Drona will always stand by the king. We cannot challenge the Kurus directly. The twins suggested that they immediately fly from Varanavata. Yudhisthira again disagreed. Once he knows we are running in fear, Duryodhan will use spies and agents to find us and kill us by any devious means. Yudhisthira decided that their best hope lay in living in the Lac House, seemingly unaware of the danger. Remaining constantly alert, they should prepare an escape tunnel under the house. They should also spend their days hunting in the woods and looking for a route that would take them away from the city. When Parochana set light to the house, they could escape without anyone knowing. Duryodhan would think them dead and would not pursue them. His brothers agreed. They then searched the house for a place to dig the tunnel. As they were looking, a man came to the house and introduced himself as a friend of Vidura. He told Yudhisthira that he was a skilled miner and had been sent there by Vidura, who had informed him that on a new moon night, Parochana planned to set light to the door of their house. Yudhisthira looked at the man carefully. Was this yet another of Duryodhan's deceits? The miner reassured him by mentioning the incident when Vidura had spoken to him in the Malecha dialect. Yudhisthira then welcomed him warmly and replied, "We are ever protected by the virtuous Vidura. It is our good fortune that you have come here. The wicked and sinful Duryodhan has had this house constructed from all sorts of flammable materials. In command of wealth and allies, he pursues us relentlessly." The miner said he would begin construction of a subterranean passage immediately. He began to dig from the center of the house and covered the hole with planks and a large rug. As the miner worked, the Pandavas spent their days wandering in the surrounding woods. They soon ascertained a route leading away from Varanavata. While living in the house, the brothers gave to Parochan the appearance of being peaceful and happy, so as not to arouse his suspicions. But at night they slept with their arms at the ready, one of them always remaining alert, in case Parochan made an unexpected move. No one but the miner knew of their plans. A full year passed in this way. Parochan was satisfied, thinking the Pandavas unaware of his intentions. When Yudhisthira saw that the minister suspected nothing and trusted them completely, he said to his brothers, "Let us preempt Parochana before he can enact his plan. I think we should ourselves set light to the house and make our escape." The tunnel was complete. Yudhisthira considered that their best hope lay in deceiving Duryodhan into thinking his plan had succeeded. That would allow the brothers to escape without being pursued. They would then have time to consider their next move. After discussing all the angles, the brothers decided that they would set fire to the house the next night. The following day, a festival was being celebrated in Varanavata. Kunti distributed food and wealth to the Brahmins, and many poor people came to the Pandavas' mansion to beg charity. By the arrangement of Providence, a Nishata tribeswoman also arrived with her 5 sons. The servants Kunti had placed in charge of distributing the food sat the woman and her sons down, then brought them some food and a large quantity of wine. Gradually they became drunk and fell asleep where they had been eating. The servants, unable to rouse them, decided to leave them there for the night, although the Pandavas were unaware of this. Outside, as night fell, a storm blew up. The Pandavas sat together in their room waiting until they were sure that Parochan, who had occupied the room by the door of the house, was asleep. Yudhisthira then instructed Bhima to set the house on fire. Bhima then took a torch and lit the door and several other places as his brothers and Kunti made their way along the tunnel. He followed them quickly, and in moments the whole house was ablaze. Hearing the roar of the fire, the citizens of Varanavata all came out and saw with horror the blazing mansion. They were aware of the rivalry between Duryodhan and the Pandavas, and they immediately guessed what had happened. "This is undoubtedly Duryodhan's doing," they said. "He has employed his evil minister to destroy the innocent and unsuspecting sons of Pandu. Fie upon that wicked man, whose understanding is so crooked." The bewailing people of the city surrounded the burning mansion and remained through the night. When morning came, they threw water onto the embers and searched the burnt-out ruins. They found the remains of Parochan, and also of the Nishada woman and her sons. Concluding that the Pandavas were dead, they lamented loudly, censuring Duryodhan and his father. Some of them even condemned Bhishma, Drona, and the other Kuru elders for allowing such a terrible thing to happen. The miner, who was present among the citizens, ensured that the searchers did not find the tunnel. Thus no one in Varanavata even guessed that the Pandavas were alive, and that they were at that time making their way through the forest. The city leaders then sent messengers to Hastinapur with the news of the Pandavas' death. When Dhritarashtra heard the messengers from Varanavata, he cried out in grief, "Alas, my brother Pandu has died again today, because his heroic sons and their illustrious mother have been killed. What a cruel destiny! How can I face life without my gentle nephews?" Dhritarashtra then ordered that the royal Brahmins go immediately to Varanavata to perform the funeral rites for Kunti and her sons. Along with Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, and other elders, the king went to the Ganges to offer sacred water to the departed souls. As they stood in the river, they cried out, "O Yudhisthira! O Bhima! O Arjuna!" Others called out the names of Kunti and the twins. Thousands of grieving citizens came out of Hastinapur to offer oblations. Sounds of wailing and sorrow filled the air. Bhishma was particularly afflicted as he remembered the young princes who had always been like sons to him. Only Vidura did not lament, as he knew the truth, but still he did not speak about it to anyone. He knew he could not risk telling even Bhishma, who was always loyal to the king and Hastinapur. The Pandavas and Kunti emerged from their tunnel some distance from Varanavata. As their eyes became accustomed to the darkness, they proceeded in the direction that they had already charted. They were tired and afraid, and they found it difficult to hurry. Seeing this, the tireless Bhima lifted them all onto his vast frame. To everyone's astonishment, he placed his mother on his shoulders, the twins on his two sides, and Yudhisthira and Arjuna on each arm, and then ran through the forest, knocking down trees and treading down bushes and brambles. At dawn they arrived at the Ganges, where another of Vidura's emissaries met them. This man was sitting in a boat, and he called out to the Pandavas as they stood measuring the depth of the river with a stone tied to a creeper. Startled, the brothers looked around. Yudhisthira approached the man in the boat, who told him that he had been told by Vidura to wait there for them. He had been there every night for months, carefully watching for the signs of the brothers. The man assured Yudhisthira of his credentials by repeating to him the conversation the prince had had with Vidura in the Malecha tongue, explaining that he had come to ferry them across the river and help them on their way. The man said, "Vidura has sent his embrace and said that you will surely be victorious over your enemies. He said that you should remain always alert and depend upon the Lord, by whose arrangement auspiciousness will always attend you. Get into this boat quickly, and I shall take you far from here." Propelled by an engine and sails, the boat moved swiftly through the flowing river toward the south. The Pandavas journeyed for some hours and were finally set down on the opposite bank near a broad path leading into the woods. The boatsman wished them success and departed, taking with him a message of thanks for Vidura. The brothers continued south. They soon entered a dense forest. Feeling tired and hungry, they sat down. Yudhisthira said in an anguished voice, "What could be more painful? Here we are lost in some deep and fearful forest. We do not know if the sinful Parochan has somehow survived and informed Duryodhan of our escape. What dangers lay ahead for us now?" Kunti was exhausted and could walk no further. She sat on a tree root, glancing about fearfully. Her son searched around for a way to go deeper into the jungle. It appeared virtually impregnable, with its huge trees and bushes enmeshed in a tight network of creepers. The cries of birds and animals filled the air. Yudhisthira gazed into the forest and said to Bhima, "O mighty son of Vayu, you must again carry us into these dreadful woods. I can see no other way for us to continue." Bhima bowed his head in respect to his elder brother. Once again he placed his mother and four brothers on his powerful body. When they were all holding on tightly, he ran straight into the forest. He bounded high into the air and broke trees with his feet, clearing a path as he progressed. Tall flowering trees fell on all sides with great cracking sounds, sending up showers of blossoms. Forest animals fled in all directions as the prince crashed through the woods. He seemed like an angry elephant king charging through the jungle. So swift was his movement that Kunti and her sons almost fainted. Still carrying the five of them, Bhima also swam the streams and lakes that crossed his path. As evening fell, they stopped for the night under the shelter of a large banyan tree. Bhima sat down with his mother and brothers as they fell to the ground, overwhelmed by fatigue, hunger, and thirst. Kunti asked Bhima to bring her some water. He replied, "I hear the sweet singing of waterfowl not far from here. Undoubtedly there is a lake nearby." The unflagging Bhima went at once toward the sound and soon found the lake. After bathing and drinking deeply, he soaked his upper garment and went back to the banyan tree. But by the time he returned, his mother and brothers had fallen into a deep sleep. Seeing them lying there on the bare ground, Bhima lamented to himself, "What more painful sight could there be? Here are my four brothers, who could not even sleep in Varanavata on the costliest of beds, sleeping now on the cold earth. And my gentle mother, as delicate and resplendent as the filament of a lotus flower, lies exhausted on the hard forest floor." Bhima wrung his hands in anguish and frustration. If only the Kauravas were present now before him, they would regret their treachery. It was only by the grace of God that Yudhisthira had not commanded him to kill them all. Bhima looked at his sleeping elder brother. Surely he deserved to rule the entire earth. He never abandoned virtue or gave way to anger. Only because of this the Kauravas were still alive. Bhima sighed and looked around. They had traveled many miles through the forest. Perhaps there was a town or village not far away. He would remain awake, guarding his brothers, and in the morning they could continue. The prince sat at the root of the banyan tree with his mind and senses alert to danger. Not far from where the brothers had stopped was a massive sal tree, on which lived a rakshasa named Hidimba. He had slept through the day and was just awakening as the Pandavas were falling asleep. Yawning and stretching his enormous arms, he sniffed the night air. At once he detected the scent of humans nearby. He sat up quickly and called out to his sister, who lived on the same tree, "Hidimbi, wake up, I smell human flesh. It has been a long time since we tasted our favorite food. My mouth is already watering. Quickly find the humans, and after killing them, bring them here. Tearing their necks with my long fangs, I shall quaff their hot foaming blood. Both of us shall eat our fill and then dance happily." The Rakshasa woman shook her long orange hair and opened her blood-red eyes. She crackled and looked at the long claws protruding from her black fingers. Hadimbi and her brother had often slain and eaten hapless travelers. Swinging down from the branch, she went silently through the trees, following the scent. In a few minutes, she arrived at the spot where the Pandavas lay. The Rakshasi saw the invincible Bhima seated nearby. As soon as her eyes fell upon him, her heart was moved by desire. The prince looked like a god. His skin was the color of molten gold, and his shoulders resembled those of a lion. His neck resembled a conch, and his eyes were like large lotus petals. Hadimbi decided immediately that he should be her husband. If she killed him, she and her brother would enjoy the brief pleasure of eating his flesh. But if she united with him, her pleasure would be far greater. Deciding to ignore her brother's order, Hadimbi assumed the form of a beautiful woman. Decorated with celestial ornaments and clothed in crimson silks, she walked slowly up to Bhima. With a bashful smile, she said, "O best of men, who are you, and what brings you to this dark and dangerous forest? Who are the godlike men laying on the ground, and who is that woman of transcendent beauty lying with them?" Bhima looked at her in surprise. Was she the forest deity? What was such a beautiful woman doing alone at night in such a place? He listened carefully as Hadimbi continued, "This forest belongs to my brother Hidimba, a powerful man-eating Rakshasa. With the intention of eating your flesh, he has sent me here to kill you." She raised her hand as Bhima suddenly stood up. "Do not fear. I have been smitten with desire upon seeing you, who are as handsome as a god. Please accept me as your wife, for I am being victimized by Cupid's shafts." Hadimbi told Bhima that she would save him from her brother. She would carry him through the sky and far away from Hidimba. Then they could enjoy together in a celestial mountain region. Bhima sat down again. He shook his head. "O Rakshasi, how do you expect me to abandon my sleeping mother and my brothers simply to gratify my lust?" Hadimbi looked down at the sleeping Pandavas and Kunti. "Wake them up. I shall carry you all away from this place." Bhima shook his head again. "I shall not wake my mother and brothers out of fear of any Rakshasa. There is no Rakshasa, Yaksha, or Gandharva able to withstand my strength. O beautifully shaped lady, you may stay or go as you please. If you like, you may send your man-eating brother to me." As they were speaking together, Hidimba was becoming impatient. Where was his foolish sister? Why had she not returned? The Rakshasa jumped down from his tree and moved toward the human scent. Hadimbi sensed her brother's approach, and she became alarmed. She pleaded with Bhima, "Please do not argue with me. My brother is coming. Do not tarry here and become his meal. Wake up the others and allow me to rescue all of you." Bhima simply smiled. "This cannibal presents no problem to me. Indeed, I shall kill him here before your eyes. Do not consider me an ordinary human being. My two arms are like the trunks of mighty elephants, and my thighs resemble iron clubs. My prowess is no less than Indra himself. I fear nothing." Hadimbi was still doubtful. She had seen the Rakshasa giants prove their superiority over men on many occasions. They were more on a level with the celestials than with humans. It was a rare human who could overpower a Rakshasa. Bhima looked over Hidimbi's shoulder and saw her brother approaching. He was as dark as a rain cloud, and he had hideous features. His ears were shaped like arrows, and the shock of red hair on his head stood erect. His powerful body, clad in a loincloth, was covered in wiry red hair. The Rakshasa was tall as a tree and had broad shoulders. His arms, thick like tree trunks, reached down to his knees. His huge mouth was open, revealing rows of fearful fangs. He opened his crimson eyes in surprise as he saw his sister standing in a human form next to Bhima. Seeing her so beautifully bedecked with celestial ornaments, Hidimba immediately understood that she had become lustful toward the human. He spoke angrily. Who is so foolish as to create obstacles for me when I am hungry? Oh, sister, you have become so senseless that you do not fear my anger. Fie upon you, O unchaste woman! Simply out of lust you are ready to do me an injury and sacrifice the very honor of our race. I shall kill you along with these humans. Pressing his teeth together, Hidemba ran at his sister with his arms raised. Bhima stood up and at once stepped forward. His voice boomed out. Stop! How dare you awaken my peacefully sleeping brothers? Nor should you attack this innocent woman. O wicked-minded one, your sister is not in control of herself. She has been brought under Cupid's control. Therefore she should not be punished. Bhima smiled scornfully at the cannibal. Challenging him to a fight, the prince said, Today you shall reach the land of the dead. I will pound your head to pieces. Your sister shall see me drag your mountain-like frame, even as a lion drags an elephant. Hawks, vultures, and jackals will then gleefully tear apart your corpse. Today this forest shall be rendered safe for all travelers. Hidemba flared up. He laughed at the human's impudence. Advancing toward Bhima, the cannibal screamed, What is the use of this boasting? First accomplish all this, and then speak. You think yourself strong, but you shall learn the truth today. For now your brothers and mother may sleep peacefully. First I shall kill you, O foul-mouthed one. After drinking your blood, I will then slay the others. The Rakshasa rushed at Bhima with his arms outstretched. Bhima immediately seized the giant's arms, and not wanting to disturb his sleeping brothers, dragged him away a full 32 cubits, even as a lion might drag a small deer. Hidemba broke free from Bhima's hold and wrapped his arms around him. He tightened his grasp and tried to crush him to death. Bhima was unharmed. Even while held in the Rakshasa's powerful grip, Bhima pulled him still further away, so that his terrible yells might not disturb the others. He then burst free from Hidemba and clasped him in turn. The two fighters displayed their might as they lifted and hurled each other violently. They crashed about like two great elephants fighting for supremacy. Huge trees were smashed and splintered. The noise awoke the other princes and their mother. They sat up and looked around. They were astonished to see the extraordinarily beautiful Hidimbi. Kunti addressed her with gentle words. O celestial maiden, who are you? To whom do you belong? Why have you come to this forest? Are you the forest deity, or an apsara? Please tell me everything. Hidimbi explained who she was and how she had come to be standing there. Pointing to the combatants, she said, I have chosen your golden-hued and immensely powerful son as my husband. Greatly angered by this, my brother has attacked him. See now how they struggle together, man and Rakshasa, filling the forest with their roars. Yudhisthira and the other Pandavas stood up hastily and looked across at Bhima. He was pounding Hidemba with his fist, making a sound like thunderclaps. The Rakshasa pressed forward and reached for Bhima's neck with his large hands. As they grappled, a dust cloud rose and covered them. They appeared like two cliffs, enveloped in mist. Arjuna ran over and, with a smile on his lips, said to his brother, O mighty armed one, why did you not wake me? I can see that you are growing tired fighting with this terrible Rakshasa. Rest now, and I shall kill him. Nakula and Sahadev will protect our mother. Arjuna was taunting his brother only to incite his anger, and his words had the desired effect. Bhima blazed up with fury and replied, You need only be a spectator, dear brother. Have no fear. Now that this evil cannibal has entered my clutches, he shall not escape with his life. Arjuna urged Bhima to make haste. Twilight was approaching, and the Rakshasa's strength would be doubled. Bhima should kill him at once before he was able to use mystic powers or illusions to fight. Bhima summoned his father Vayu's latent power. With a roar, he lifted the Rakshasa above his head. Whirling him around, Bhima said, "O cannibal, you have led a life of sin. Your existence has been in vain. Therefore you deserve an unholy death. Now I shall slay you like the beast you are, thereby freeing this forest from its thorny plant." Bhima whirled the Rakshasa 100 times and dashed him onto the ground. Hidemba let out a terrible roar, which reverberated around the forest like a massive drum. Now Hidemba was only semi-conscious. Bhima lifted him again, and by smashing him onto the trunk of a large sal tree, broke his back in two. He then stood up and smiled at his brothers, who by then had gathered around him. They embraced him, and looking at the lifeless form of the giant Rakshasa, congratulated him for his incredible feat.